situation here at the stadium where Rangers bus is trying to get out, but it has been blocked in by supporters. The players are still inside the tunnel. They've not been able to get onto the bus. And again, it's the supporters just venting their frustrations at the situation that their club are in.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
All three of us here this week, for a change.
Yay.
Yeah.
Full out.
We've all had weeks away, and now we're back. We're back to talk about football in the middle of the interlull. In the international break, it's even less exciting than usual because England, the team that we all follow, just played a friendly, so it's even more pointless than ever. But hey, there's plenty going on in the world of football, isn't there, Terry? Plenty going on still.
Oh, yeah, no, there's qualifications going on all over the show.
Oh, yes.
Right now, all across the globe, and, you know, fates being sort of decided. It doesn't help because, of course, this is that qualification period where not every... I mean, there will be qualifiers coming through out of this, but, you know, we've still got another round to go before we know who's going where, which is possibly where the qualification tournament becomes a little bit more interesting.
Mm.
To be fair, as dull as they are, I will be watching the Northern Ireland versus Germany game this evening because I think there's some peril involved in Northern Ireland's going well, Germany are Germany. So, you know, that might be worth a watch.
But yes.
Yeah, it's still pretty weak source, to be fair. Thin gruel.
Northern Ireland haven't beaten Germany in 40 years.
Well, then now is as good a time as any, Graeme.
It is. It is. Yes, Gerry Armstrong and all that. So there is some intriguing matchups in international football. Jan, I'm not going to bother coming to you about international football because I know you're just shaking your head there.
Please don't.
I have to tell the listeners that he's shaking his head because obviously this is the Sound of Football and we are 100% audio still.
Oh, yeah, very definitely. Yeah, especially after listening to your five-minute diatribe at the episode when I was away. And I thought, right, well, we won't be doing that then. I mean, you could have just said something, but no. This is the Sound of Football way. Let's just not confront him. Let's just, like, throw shade at him while his back is turned.
Well, we're just checking that you're listening, okay? That's all.
I was listening and plotting.
Wait, just you wait. I'll get this video sorted if it's the last thing I do. Now, let me have a look at yet another how-to YouTube video.
I know, I'm pretty certain I know how to do it, but I have decided that it is not the way of this podcast. And so, fuck it.
Too difficult, listeners. It was too difficult.
It wasn't difficult. I could do it. I just felt I didn't have the full support of the board, and so I'm shelving that project. Perhaps there'll be another project along at some point that I can use it for.
Well, it could happen still, Terry. I could have to reluctantly accept it happening, you know, because that's what happens these days, isn't it? You can talk about things, and you can say, no, we don't want this to happen. Look, we're a governing body. We don't allow things to happen like that. We get to make the decisions around here. And then the next week you say, yes, we reluctantly accept this happening. Because that's what UEFA did, didn't they, Jan? This thing has been planned for a long time where a couple of teams in Spain and a couple of teams in Italy wanted to play outside of their country and have a lucrative payday outside. And now it's been accepted, rubber stamped. It's got the official seal of approval, isn't it, Jan?
Reluctantly.
Reluctantly, yes.
They were keen to emphasise reluctantly. So Barcelona and Villarreal are going to play a game in December out in Miami.
Mm.
That's in America.
Yes.
And Milan are going to play Como out in Perth, not Perth, Scotland, Perth in Western Australia, the whole other side of the planet. And they're doing that in February. Which just seems a bit of a strange place to go to play a game of football. And not that I've got anything wrong with the good people of Perth. It's just, it's a fucking long way away, isn't it, from Milan?
It is. It is a hell of a long way from Milan. It's seven time zones, I think, 7 hours time difference there. Thankfully, Perth Glory are playing away that weekend. I think they're playing MacArthur. They're not even playing in Perth Glory Stadium. They're actually playing in the big AFL stadium there in Perth. Same thing's happening in Miami as well. They're playing in the Hard Rock rather than the Chase, where Inter Miami play. So they're going to the big local sports venues rather than the local soccer venues, which I suppose says, look, this is soccer. Come and watch us. Although you have teams here yourself who are in the top leagues. No one goes there. Perth get about 6,000 people turning up to their home games. Inter Miami do a bit better because they've got Messi playing for them, but, well, usually anyway. So what do you think about this, Jan? It's a bad thing, isn't it?
I think it's a bad thing.
Yes.
And it's only been done for one reason, isn't it? And that's for the finances and to spread your brand abroad.
Yes.
It really does leave a bit of taste in my mouth. I think that for the fans of all four of those clubs, they're going to feel pretty hard to buy because, you know, we are the original fan. We turn up every week or every other week and we follow our team. And now you've met some new fans that are far cooler than us and you want to go and spend the weekend with them. And that's going to lead to a breakup. I think you might well see some protests over this.
Yeah.
Because this is blatant money grabbing, isn't it? They're not even trying to hide this. The other thing as well, I can understand Barca and Villarreal going to Miami because, you know, there's a lot of Spanish speakers in that part of the world and they're football men, and there's a lot of people live there. Not that I agree with it and not that I like it, but I can understand them going there. I haven't got my head around, and bearing in mind, this is probably because you only told me about this 30 minutes ago. I was aware of the Barcelona one, but not the Milan Como game. Perth is, as I said, is very, very long way away from Italy. That seems strange as well. But Perth, it's not insubstantial, but if they're going for a payday, there's not a great big population to draw on like there is in Miami. So, I mean, that may be my ignorance, but it just seems a bit odd to me.
Well, let's bring Terry into the conversation here, because Terry, you've got connections in Australia. You have family there. Could you shed any light as to why they would have chosen Perth instead of, say, I don't know, Sydney or Melbourne?
I mean, unless there is an Italian diaspora in Perth, which I'm not aware of, which is entirely possible, but it strikes me that the Italian diaspora is more likely to be, oh gosh, because I know we've got Australian listeners, so they could be sort of saying, oh, shut up, you flaming galai. You don't know what you're talking about, Duff Ellen. It is a strange one. It's Como's game, isn't it? It's Como's
home. No, it's not. It's Milan's game. So,
what?
Yeah, and there's a very, very good reason why it's happening. It's because the San Siro is unavailable that weekend because it's the Winter Olympics opening ceremony. So you know what the schedules are like. It's impossible to try and get a new date for a match, especially at the San Siro. They ground share. You can't just move fixtures around willy-nilly. Obviously, a winter postponement is just unheard of in Italy. So they've got to work out something. Why not we play it in a much warmer clime? We'll go to Perth. And that'll be fine. So a nice local derby it would have been, but now it's not. Now it's a completely non-local derby, thousands and thousands of miles away.
And only assume that there was no other ground in Italy that they could host this game.
Absolutely no other ground at all. Nowhere.
It's out of the question.
Yes.
You know, that they could have not gone to some other inner city that was not far away. Then maybe that just was just completely out of the question. I mean, they had no choice. Or even another country that maybe borders on to Italy, like France or Germany, that maybe, I mean, that would have been in itself unorthodox, wouldn't it? It feels to me, and I don't want to sound cynical, Graham.
Yeah.
It feels to me that there might be something else going on here rather than just simply, you know, the fact that there's an inconvenient scheduling moment that they're trying to overcome. It feels like a long way to go to play somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it all feels a little bit forced when they say it like that. I was, oh, well, you know, our ground's busy, so let's just do something else. Okay, fair enough. Their ground is busy. I get that. So let's take advantage of and have a commercial opportunity to go into a different market. They must have done their homework. There must be a reason why Perth is a good selection for them, because it's a long way to travel and it's a long way to travel back from. Fortunately, you know, neither of them have got any midweek fixtures probably immediately afterwards. So they will have that a little bit of time to travel back. But there's going to be a lot riding on it to do that. That is an inconvenient amount of time to travel for the athletes. I mean, God forbid, you know, when one would think about the athletes. But it all feels a real weird one. I mean, I can get the other one, the Spanish one, kind of, but and that's because I just don't have enough knowledge of Perth. So Australian listeners are welcome to write in and say, oh my God, yeah, half of the people there are Italian. There's going to be apps. They're going to pack that stadium out. In which case then, well, it's still rubbish, but fine.
I think I know the answer. And this is not a usual attempt to be funny. I actually think this is the answer. It's time zones.
Mm.
So you can access most of Asia time zone wise from Perth because there's no difference, for example, between Perth and Hong Kong. So I think it purely is a scheduling thing. I think that's just what's popped into my tiny mind and is rattling around until I could get it out.
That makes sense.
But then which case, why not have it in, I don't know, Seoul or in Tokyo? Maybe it's something as straightforward as the fact they'll just drop off in Indonesia or Malaysia for a friendly as well on the way while they're out there. A nice money-spinning friendly in the middle of February, you know, because, well, they'll be able to free up time in their schedule for that, wouldn't they?
Mm. Well, I'm sure they'd probably figure something out. It sounds like an absolute nightmare of a journey and of a trip, but I think what Jan's suggestion is perfectly reasonable. I mean, it would have to be something to do with that. So it's not so much that Perth is some kind of home away from home or some hotbed of Italian football. It's just it's conveniently placed in the time zones. I guess they would be confident that they would be able to fill out that stadium. If it's an AFL stadium, it's going to be an absolute barn because, you know, they make them big over there. So they're going to need to sell a lot of tickets. But I suppose they could probably get away with giving quite a lot away if there's going to be a big payout for, say, from a broadcaster's point of view. The key will be how much money they make from selling the TV rights for it into those Asian markets, I suppose.
Well, it is a TV rights company that is behind both of these games, isn't it? The move for this, a company called Relevant, who have been pushing for this, lobbying for these games to be played outside of their countries. Now, as a business, this is UEFA's preferred partner for selling their Champions League rights. So when UEFA said they were reluctant to rubber stamp this, they're still not reluctant to do business with Relevant. They seem to actually be, as far as I can see anyway, they seem to be business partners.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's not get carried away. I mean, all they're asking to do is move a couple of league games in and out of country. I mean, like UEFA are the kind of people who do deals and make friends with arms dealers and smugglers and all manner of tyrants. So, you know, TV companies who want to move football matches to other places, it's fairly small beer by comparison. But yeah, I mean, you have to wonder whether or not that might soil the relationship between the two going forward. But yeah, it puts UEFA in a difficult spot, doesn't it? Because they don't want to do it. But once it had been announced, UEFA then have to then say, no, you can't do that, in which case then things get messy, because things are likely, I don't mean Leo Messi, I mean Messi with a Y, the important distinction to make on a football podcast, and things could get legal. So I suspect that what they're trying to do now is like saying, right, fine, you can have this, but after that, no, forget it. I don't know whether that's actually going to happen or not.
Yeah, and it does make you think, are UEFA in control of this situation? Or are they managing it as best they can and trying not to look like idiots? Or are they just fed up because they want to be the ones to suggest this and be in control of it? What's going on in Seferin's mind right now? Is he absolutely seething? Seething Seferin, is he?
I don't know whether he is a seething Seferin, but there's big clubs pushing for this for a long time, haven't there?
Yeah.
And in my mind, it's a bit like the whole Super League thing that popped up. And then suddenly the big clubs get loads of concessions for the Champions League. And I think maybe this might be a little bit of that, just a bit of a concession. Like, you know, let's just keep it all down, lads, keep it all together. We'll let you have it, but you got to stop asking. But I think that Real Madrid, who are amusingly annoyed by this, which is everyone likes to see, I think,
yes,
it's fair
yes.
to say. But they're now going to be pushing for this because they can really cream it. Not that Barca can't, of course, but they can really rake it in if they went abroad. So they're going to want to do this. There are big teams that have been pushing at this, and it's always the big teams. I don't think Como would probably want to go along to this. Would Villarreal would want to go along to this? No disrespect to those teams there, but they're not super clubs like Barca and Real and Milan. That might be an unwise statement, but they're not as big internationally, surely, as the teams that I've mentioned.
No, they're not. They are Champions League qualifiers this season, but they do not have a big following. They are a relatively new club to the top table in Spanish football. They are effectively giving up a home tie as well, because if you play Barcelona in Miami, what percentage of that crowd, considering that this is now the home of Leo Messi and Luis Suarez as well, what percentage of that crowd are going to turn up in Barcelona shirts? This is going to be another Barcelona home game, effectively, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, it is worth pointing out that Villarreal, they're up for this because it's their home game. So it's the choice is completely theirs. And I know, similarly, although it's not Como's home game, it wouldn't have happened if they'd been against it.
Yeah.
They would have had to have agreed to it, really. I mean, it would have. You're not going to force these people. But yeah, so the incentives that they're getting and the cut that they're getting from this, I think, is going to be quite significant for Villarreal, which is why they're going along with it. But really what they're doing is you've got a club that was Europa League winner with Unai Emery, what, 3 or 4 years ago, mm-hmm. I want to say, something like that. A club that has competed at the top level in Europe in the past. But yeah, you're right, Graham. They are, if you like, an upper middle class La Liga club and qualified to the Champions League. This is a relevant football club in Spain, and they're running the risk of forfeiting basically 3 home points.
Yeah.
You know, they're giving up a significant advantage in order to do this. And it's just like, what does that do for the competition? Again, it is fun to see Real Madrid get angry about stuff like this, but they have a point. If Real Madrid lose the title by 2 points this season, they can look to that game and say, well, that those guys cheated because, you know, they engineered an extra home game. Now, it could backfire on both clubs because, again, the time distance is not great. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of heavy legs afterwards, you know, and it could well be that it will work against them. But if it doesn't, then you have to question the sporting integrity behind these decisions, which are just strictly commercial decisions. I think it's rotten, really, and I wouldn't want to see it. I mean, they tried to pull something like this off in the Premier League and it was resisted. I suspect it will continue to be resisted. The problem, I think, is that the leagues like Serie A, like La Liga, they're still not able to compete in terms of revenue by the Premier League, not even by a mile. So they're looking at ways like this to try and bridge the gap with the Premier League. And they're in danger of undermining the sporting integrity of the competitions that are their absolute bread and butter. This is the absolute rock-solid bread and butter which they rely upon for their income and for their existence. I think it's quite dangerous what they're doing and really, really, really short-sighted.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about them trying to bridge the gap, the financial gap, I assume you were talking about with the Premier League. The thing is that I think the Premier League could easily turn to this if they wanted to because they have a more valuable product and they could pick up a Liverpool or a Manchester United game, for example, and move that off to America or put it in Perth so you've got access to Asia and absolutely rake it in. So if anything, I think this probably gives an incentive to the Premier League clubs to go and do something like that, which would be awful and would be massively resisted, I think, by the fan base. I think you'd see protests akin to those that we had when the Super League was announced. You know, you imagine a team like Manchester United or Liverpool or you know, Palace Chelsea, playing a game away from these islands for the reasons that they would do it. It's awful. Mm. It's awful.
Yeah.
It sounds like something that Chelsea would do, right, Graham?
Yeah. Oh,
Chelsea would definitely do it.
That is awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're an awful club.
They are an awful club, and it's exactly what they do. Obviously, people will point to the fact that this weekend we had the New York Jets playing Denver Broncos at the Tottenham Stadium. And say, well, look, it's okay to welcome other sports coming, but not okay to export your sports. How is that fair? And, it's not fair. But hey, look, you know, you have a franchise sport. This is not a franchise sport. This is a club sport. It doesn't work that way. Isn't that right, Terry?
And just because you've lost one argument, it doesn't mean you have to lose another argument. It's not a race to the bottom.
Isn't it, Terry?
No, Graham, it's not a race to the bottom. No, but in all seriousness, NFL do NFL things if that's what they think is the best way for them to push their sport forward. And if they genuinely think that it's a good idea, and they've been doing it for years now, and it doesn't appear to have done the sport any harm. So yes, you could make that argument and say, well, look, yeah. Personally, I don't buy it. I don't think that that's appropriate in this instance. I think you're right. I think the fact that the NFL is a franchise sport and a sealed sport with no promotion and relegation, also the fact that it's got a playoff structure as well. There's a whole number of things going on with the NFL The way the whole thing is set up by comparison to club football in Europe is very, very, very different. Mm. And I think it would be unwise to make comparisons and look for precedent with US-based sport. Not because they're terrible, but just simply because they're very different to European organised sport.
I haven't checked this out, but I'm pretty confident in saying this. I don't think there's ever been a playoff game played outside of America in any of the sports.
That's correct. I'm certain that's correct. Yeah, these are regular. They're always regular season games, and they're played in October.
Yeah,
where in early in the season.
Yeah,
yeah, and I'm sure there's a reason for that.
The utterly pointless end of the season, the long drawn out end that really doesn't really matter because you know.
Well, I'm sure NFL fans are probably strongly disagreeing with you and pointing to the fact that there are actually very few NFL fixtures and each game is precious. But let's not get into tedious NFL arguments because they're even more tedious than tedious football arguments. And that's tedious.
Yes, yes, it is.
I don't know how many times I'm going to have to say tedious in this podcast. But
well, yes. Yeah. Well, maybe you could say it a few more times because let's have a look at some other things that UEFA have been up to. Let's talk about international scheduling. See, Terry, you love my segues, don't you?
I do. That's a great segue. And my God, the international break. We really did pick the wrong week to take off, didn't we? Why couldn't you have gone lolly this week?
Well, I did. So anyway, look, this is what we've got to put up with. Okay. Well, yeah, but the international breaks could become more interesting. could become more interesting in years to come because, as we suggested on this podcast, UEFA are considering moving over to a Swiss model for qualification. This sounds good, doesn't it, Jan? Doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does sound good. Anything that would make qualification for the Euros and the World Cup more interesting, then they need to do that because I just switch off on international breaks because England end up playing Andorra or Liechtenstein or whatever. In fact, we seem to play Andorra quite a lot, don't we?
Mm, yeah.
It seems to be always playing Andorra. And they're just games that, you know, when was the last time England didn't just win their group in a Euros or World Cup qualifier?
Years
2008, ago. Maybe.
Yeah. There's just no jeopardy in the matter. And the risk of rehashing conversations we had very recently, they need to do something. Because they don't seem to have a problem filling the stadiums for qualification games, and that's good. But no one's turning on during the weekend and for midweek fixtures for these. It just feels like they don't carry any jeopardy, so therefore there's little interest. And if you don't have jeopardy, people are not gonna bother. So if they're gonna do something where you've got the bigger teams playing each other more, like you do in the Champions League, then that's gonna make it more interesting, and probably a bit better for the smaller teams who actually don't get their arses handed to them, you know, every few months, which just must be awful. Maybe they can play teams around themselves. And that's what the Swiss model potentially will allow. So, yeah, I welcome the fact that they're looking at new ideas. And it's not just because the one we talked about the other week where they were bringing two international breaks together, I thought, well, OK, fine. So it saves. It means we have one less week of international break, but it's not ripping up trees, is it? This is actually is something that's looks meaningful. So yeah, I'd love to see if they're going to do it or not.
One of the criticisms of the Swiss model in the Champions League and Europa League is the fact that it potentially doesn't have the jeopardy there. They play lots of games and only a few teams fail to go through to the knockout stage. But it does give more variety in the fixtures and arguably better fixtures. So I think this would translate quite well onto the international stage. And while, as Jan, I think, alluded to there, it may not have more jeopardy, but it will just feel more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit too early to be judging the Champions League, the UEFA club competitions under the Swiss model. But yeah, the feeling is that you get more exciting fixtures, but you still are able to have it in such a way that the senior clubs, you know, really have to mess it up badly to fail to qualify for the next stage. And if that is how it shakes out, then we assume that that's how it will shake out in the qualifications, which also links back to something that we were talking about, which was the utterly hideous and conceited view that the senior nations should just be allowed straight in. Because to be perfectly honest with you, why are we going through this charade? Because everyone wants them anyway, because that's there because of the aforementioned money. And so the Swiss model might actually facilitate that a little bit better. But to be fair, again, we have to really have a better understanding about what the Swiss model is doing for the club game before we can make any judgments like that. I'm sorry to be cynical, but it feels to me as though this is like going, well, really what we're doing here, lads, is we're just sort of like hoping that the senior teams, you know, unless they, you know, pull a massive Italy or England 2008 and, you know, really, really balls it up, then they will be there, which is where we want them to be, because we want the nations with the biggest markets to come to the World Cup so that the FIFA family can then redistribute the wealth to the smaller nations and help grow the game.
Yeah, I think Italy is still second in their group, aren't they, behind Norway? So, yeah, fingers crossed.
And to be fair, Norway are proper good this qualification round time. They've got some good players. So that is, yes, that's all. It is funny, Italy, yes, haha. But actually Norway, I think, are quite good. But yeah, absolutely. So, but anyway, that would kind of remove that. Who knows, maybe even Scotland would qualify, but it looks like Scotland may well qualify anyway. So I shall just keep my trap shut about Scottish football. Now or later?
Oh, let's do it now, shall we?
Can we do it now? Sorry. Yes. Did I segue us? That was an accidental segue.
No, that's fine. It was quite understated, but I liked it. I think we can run with it. Okay, let's talk a bit about Scottish football, shall we? Yes, right.
Football. God. This is usually death. New listeners, this is usually death.
Ah, well, yes. And this is where the Scottish listeners that we have suddenly go, oh my God.
Yeah, we don't have any Scottish listeners. We lost them on numerous occasions whenever we talk about Scottish football.
That's only because I started putting the Highlander soundtrack as a bed while we did it.
We are the shame, MacLeod.
We are brothers.
We are brothers. I am Spanish. Highlander was actually casted by us. We're that old. And we casted a Frenchman to play a Scot and a Scotsman to play a Spaniard. That was us. Sorry.
Again. Yeah. 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 We also did Bram Stoker's Dracula, didn't we? Get the Welsh guy to play the Swiss guy. Get the Americans to play the English. Yeah. You get the idea. Yeah.
It was, yeah.
It's like a pantomime.
Anyway, Russell Martin got the sack from Rangers, and now Rangers are looking for a new manager. Who's on the shortlist, Terry? Who do you think is going to get this job?
Well, the favourite, Graham, is Danny Roll, ex of Sheffield Wednesday. And he's a youngish manager, like inexperienced, but also names that have been tossed around, and we do have to toss around a few names here. Is Ralf Hasenhüttl, former Southampton boss, maybe going back to Southampton and seeing if that works again. For some reason, Kieran McKenna's name is in the frame. And I don't mean that to be dismissive of Kieran McKenna, because I think he's a fine manager. He's got a good career ahead of him. He should stay at Ipswich and make it work. Michael Carrick is out of work, so he's obviously there. This is a job that Stephen Gerrard knocked back. Right? Let's just say that, shall we? Stephen Gerrard knocked this job back. But I think the name that leaps out to me, and certainly leapt out to you when you mentioned it, Graham, before we recorded, was Brian Potter.
It's gone back to Brian, has he now?
it's gone back to Brian, I'm afraid. Absolutely.
I think I'm willing to allow this if he does go to Rangers. And there was a lot of sort of ex-championship managers on that list. I think most of them would be quite good to go there. Who do you think would be best suited for that role? Is it Potter, do you think? Or do you think one of those other guys?
I mean, just think about this for a second. Graham Potter gets announced as Rangers manager. And there'll be people outside of Ibrox with pitchforks.
Well, I mean, these are aren't they?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, okay, there'll be more people outside of Ibrox with pitchforks. These are a passionate and, dare I say, opinionated supporter set. I think Graham Potter might find it challenging there. I mean, if he took that job, I mean, you know, Rangers are a club with fine traditions, and they've been very successful in Scotland over their history. So why wouldn't you want to go and manage one of the biggest teams in Scotland? That's absolutely fine and understandable. But given what's just happened there, Graham Potter's going to go there with his style, which is not as robust as I think some other coaches have, and he's going to go to that. Sorry, I'm trying to make this sound nice, but it's just he must have a death wish to want to go to Rangers, right? It's a volatile supporter base. It's a club that's just changed ownership. They've been through an awful time with Russell Martin, and he's going to go there. And if he thought it was bad at West Ham, he's really going to struggle there. That is the wrong move. Brian, if you're listening, Brian, call me. That's the wrong move. You need somebody robust. You need somebody who's prepared to deal with a lot of expectation, to deal with a lot of flack, to deal sometimes with a bit of hostility, a lot of hostility. In fact, all of the hostility. So I don't think a delicate little flower like Brian Potter is going to manage it.
Kevin Muscat's down there, Terry. That's a name from the past there, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, he has his terrific career at Melbourne Victory, and as a player, played for Rangers. Feels like a little bit of a stretch. And you can understand, however, why they might want to try and see if they can get back maybe someone who's got some kind of emotional connection to the club that would work. Similarly, that when they tried to get Steven Gerrard back, and they spent some time with Gerrard. But, you know, as listeners have surmised, I'm not an expert on Scottish football, but I was reading that the issue seems to be that there's been a restructuring since the takeover. They have a sporting director there now, and Steven Gerrard was given a lot of money to spend. And, I mean, you spent it well because they won stuff. But that is not how the new owners are playing things. They're playing things a little bit more cute. And I think that this is part of the problem, I suspect, is that they're looking to find a coach that's going to be able to match the squad of players that they currently have, and with the recruitment strategy that the club have taken on, and they're clearly struggling. And Gerrard wisely, if that's the case, wisely took the decision that it wasn't for him. And that was a smart thing to do, because he doesn't want to take their money and then find himself and also toss away his legacy, you know, by having a really, really bad run at Rangers. And so he's done the right thing. So they are in a difficult spot. It being even more so, of course, because this, of course, is the year that Hearts decide that they're going to be good now. Obviously, they've had a new minority investment from Tony Bloom, the Brighton manager. They've not necessarily spent materially that much money, but I would imagine that they're plugging in all of that sort of like Brighton MCO loveliness that they've got going in on there. And, you know, they've had a tremendous start, managed, of course, by Derek McInnes, who turned Rangers down a few years ago. So, you know, it does feel as though Rangers have got some work to do before they can turn things around. And there's every possibility that they will finish out of the top two, which would, I mean, that would be unprecedented, absolutely unprecedented. So there's even a possibility the Hearts might win the title. So actually, Scottish football is quite interesting this season for those of us who don't usually follow it and dare I say, can occasionally be a dismissive of it. So, I mean, I don't really know where Rangers really turn. But, I mean, they've just got to look at the squad of players they've got, do some work, figure out who the best coach is and go from there, really. But is Kevin Muscat the answer? Who knows?
Well, how do Australians fare in Scottish football? Do they get okay out there? I don't know. I haven't checked recently.
In Glasgow? Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, there is precedent for an Australian coach doing quite well in Glasgow.
Well, you see, this is what they need. They need somebody who's done very well in Scottish football, who's possibly soon to be out of work. Now, clearly, it's not going to cause any problems, is it? A former Celtic manager going to Rangers, because there's no problems. There's a little bit of rivalry, but it'll be fine. Ange. They need Big Ange.
Well, Well, see, look at us talking about Scottish football. See, I might even put some Scottish football in the box set. Not this weekend. I'll leave it another weekend because Hearts Celtic is coming up at the end of the month.
I was about to say Hearts Celtic is the one.
That's the game to go in there. But hey, we've got another weekend before that. And so what will we be watching this weekend, I wonder? Well, it's Der Klassiker, Terry.
Yeah, this is interesting. We're both, Bayern Munich versus Borussia Dortmund, the two remaining unbeaten teams in the Bundesliga, going head-to-head. Dortmund have dropped points on two games. So they're actually like 4 points behind already. Bayern have got 100% record. So, you know, it is too early to talk about title deciders, unless we're talking about the Bundesliga, in which case it's usually about now that we know what's going to happen. I think Dortmund really, really do need to try and get at least a point from this game in order to be able to stay in touching distance of this. Otherwise, Bayern would need, you know, a major injury crisis to not go running away over the horizon, even at this early stage of the season. So it's definitely a game worth watching on Sky Sports. Definitely worth it.
And also this weekend, we got Liverpool Man United to watch on Sunday. Of course, that's going to be great viewing. But it's the start of the new A-League season. That starts this weekend with Melbourne Victory versus Auckland City. Gary's going to be writing the preview for that. He's also written a preview for the season. That's on our blog at the moment. You can read that right now. Gary gives you the lowdown of all the teams and gives you something worth getting up for on a Saturday morning. Tuning in to TNT Sports. Watching some football before midday. Before you've even got dressed and you're eating your Cocoa Pops. Can't argue with that at all. We'll have a bit of A-League, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And if you want to see what we think of all those games, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. Subscribe to our Substack, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. Or you can go and read it on the blog. You can go and read it on the blog at the same time you go and read Gary's A-League preview. Lots of content. We're all about the content this week, aren't we? You can tell we've had a week off. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Ooh, am I segueing? Have I just segued? I'm not sure it's my job. I'm not the authorised segwayer. I suddenly lost confidence in myself.
You've got to just say, hey, fuck it, I'm going to segway. I'm bored of this conversation. I'm going to the next one. That's what I do.
Yeah. Subconsciously, that was clearly what was going on.
I think it's probably more important for you to do these things, because otherwise I'm just going to ask you a question that you're not going to have an opinion on at one point.
It will happen at some point. It's not happened yet, though.
No, yeah. That's true.
You answer the question with a segue. Well, it's interesting you should ask me that about UEFA. Yeah. Really, what's interesting me at the moment is the manager vacancy at Rangers. Well, that was quite a brutal segue.
Yeah. I'm not sure that counts as a segue, yeah. And I think that just basically...
It's changing the subject.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like to think I've got a little bit more finesse than that.
I do not.
We all see.